Hello, my name is Noel Bell. I'm a psychotherapist based in London, and today I'm chatting with Brand Courtright, who's the author of three books, Brand, but the one in particular that we're going to discuss in this interview is Psychotherapy and Spirit, which was recommended reading on the Intricate of Transpersonal course at CCPE in London. Brilliant book on basic assumptions, the working principles, and excellent references. Can we just start? Page 17 always jumps out at me when you say it is hard to understand how psychology, which has tried to discover the truth of human existence, could have avoided the realm of spirituality for so long. What do you put that down to?
I guess it's because the founders of modern psychology, Freud, Reich, those in Freud's inner circle, the founders of rational emotive therapy, most of the founders of the different schools of psychology were atheists. Mm-hmm. And so they had no use for spirituality. And also they were trying hard to be scientific. They were really trying to make psychology a science of persons. And so I think those two things together made spirituality off limits for a long time in psychology. And this whole vast realm of psychological wisdom of the world spiritual traditions was just left aside until recently, until transpersonal psychology really came onto the scene. I mean, Jung began it, but the field of transpersonal psychology really said, okay, any psychology is going to be incomplete unless it includes the spiritual. And so the transpersonal agenda really has been to integrate psychology and spirituality into a single whole.
And it's ironic, isn't it, given that the transpersonal, the so-called newest kid on the block, has taken on board the perennial philosophy that goes back centuries. Is it a naive question to think why, with these great scholars, were they avoiding all that the perennial philosophy was saying for so long?
It's really interesting. This historical fact of spirituality being left out of psychology, you know, there's something when you begin your training as a psychotherapist. When people began, like in these early psychoanalytic institutes in Vienna, or behaviorism with Watson, or with Reich, there's almost a cult-like atmosphere there. You feel like this is the truth, and this is the most important truth and the most central truth, and others are either lesser or not so important. And so there is a kind of disparaging or minimizing of other approaches as you, I think, find meaning in the particular school that you're into. And I think that continued for quite a long time as psychology developed. And in many ways, it was really, at least in the West, psychedelics in the 60s that just opened everything up. They just exploded the whole scene and blew up the whole materialistic worldview to see that, yeah, there's a lot more going on than just a purely physicalist explanation can account for.
Your background is in clinical psychology.
That's right.
So what do you take from psychoanalysis?
Well, I think of psychoanalysis as in some ways having really invented the field of modern psychology. I mean, there's so much that we take for granted now that was brand new when Freud was first starting. Now, contemporary psychoanalysis has evolved a lot over Freud's initial formulations. But this idea that who we are as adults is significantly determined by what happened to us as children, that was a brand new idea. Mm-hmm. That dreams are significant. Wow, that was Freud's idea, that there are parts of our consciousness that we're not aware of, that there are defenses against feelings, mm-hmm. all that brand new stuff until Freud came along. And I think of classical psychoanalysis, Freudian psychoanalysis, as describing a particular dimension of human consciousness. In integral psychology, I talk about body, heart, mind, spirit, making up this whole spectrum of human consciousness. And this level of the heart, or the emotional being, we can talk about as existing in three levels: lower, central, and higher levels of our emotional being. And this lower emotional, this instinctual realm, was really quite beautifully mapped by Freud and the classical psychoanalysts. And they came up with this idea that our instincts consist mostly of sex and aggression, different sexual derivatives and aggressive derivatives. but contemporary psychoanalysis sees that there's much more going on than this. And I think also that as the lid of repression was lifted on Victorian society back in the 1900s, early 1900s, that society itself changed. And this lower unconscious that had been repressed got integrated. And so it wasn't so, it didn't loom so large. And even towards the end of his life, Freud began to think that the energies of the psyche are not just instinctual, but also the self, the ego itself has its own energies. And that's kind of where contemporary psychoanalysis is. It really sees that the self, this central part of the emotional being, is organized by our relationships, that we are fundamentally relational beings, and that the self emerges in a web of relationships. Mm-hmm. With mother, with father, with caregivers, these early attachment figures. And these early attachment figures, we internalize their images of us, and we internalize these attachment patterns, which we then tend to play out the rest of our lives in various forms, unless we do some kind of inner work that really opens up our relational possibilities so there's greater relational freedom. And I think of Jung as like sort of the third piece in this. The third is analytic psychology. Talks about this higher realm of the emotional being. That is imaginal. That works with symbols. It begins to take on a mentalized quality, a more visionary quality. And so I think of psychoanalysis, classical, contemporary, and Jungian, as having mapped this whole emotional dimension of consciousness quite well and quite thoroughly. But of course, there's others. There's the cognitive dimension, which cognitive therapy talks about, this mental part. And there's also the body, because our feelings emerge out of our bodily experiencing. That was Wilhelm Reich's big insight. And that also seems to be corroborated by contemporary neuroscience, right? For Freud, feelings were mental events. For Wilhelm Reich, feelings emerged out of our bodily experiencing. Contemporary neuroscience has shown that Reich was right, that the brain organizes feelings in two different ways. The left brain, which is our dominant hemisphere, and is verbal and logical, organizes emotion in terms of narratives, in terms of words, we talk about our feelings. But before the left brain knows how to describe a feeling, it needs to know what the feeling is. And that it gets from the right brain. And our right brain gets our feelings from a primary body sense, from this heart, gut, torso area of the body. And it's based on that the left brain spins a story of what it is we're feeling. So it does seem like our feelings emerge out of our bodily experiencing. And so Reich was right. And so all of the existential therapies, the body therapies, Gestalt, the somatic therapies, even Rogers, client-centered therapy, was theoretically rooted in this organismic view, in this view of the body as primary for our feelings. And so that's really how I see Western psychology kind of organizing. It leaves out the realm of the spirit, and there we get the spiritual traditions to really tell us about our inner being. But the Western psychology describes this outer being, this body, heart, and mind. It just leaves out our most fundamental, most essential part, which is our spirit.
How would you describe spirit and soul?
Soul, I think of as our deepest individuality. So I think of the world's tradition, the world's spiritual traditions, as lining up in one of two ways: traditions of the personal divine and traditions of the impersonal divine. Mm-hmm. So much of the West has grown up under traditions of the personal divine: Christianity, Judaism, Islam, which see the world and this whole universe as a creation of this divine being. This divine being is imaged in the West in primarily masculine terms, but in the East, in the Bhakti traditions of India, it's imaged as male, as female, as both male and female at the same time, Shiva, with half male, half female body, as neither, as both, but still as a presence, as a being. And our soul is a portion of this being. And it exists in a relationship of love in these traditions of the personal divine. And in many of these traditions, the soul is located in the heart, or actually in Hinduism, certainly in integral philosophy, integral Vedanta, it's located behind the heart chakra on an inner plane. And it is what evolves lifetime after lifetime. It's the essence of our identity. And it's the personal, individuated part of our consciousness, as opposed to our spirit. And spirit comes out of these impersonal divine traditions. So Buddhism, Taoism, Advaita Vedanta, it also exists in Christianity and Judaism and Islam, but it's less well developed there. See the divine as this vast impersonal consciousness. You can talk about it negatively as emptiness. You can talk about it positively as Satchitananda, consciousness, bliss. But this ultimate reality, Brahman, the divine, is one with our spirit, called Atman or Buddha nature. And this is the Atman that is Brahman, that is identical with that in essence. And at this level, it's beyond individuality. This is universal. This is non-evolving and universal. And most traditions stop at one or the other realization as the ultimate. And what the perennial philosophy talks about is both of these. And certainly in integral yoga, integral philosophy, both of these are part of our spiritual being. We have both a personal soul that evolves over lifetimes, and we have an impersonal Atma, or Buddha nature, that is universal and one with all. And that both aspects are important to develop. So that would be the level of spirit. Atman. And soul is this level of individual spiritual identity. Psychotherapy in some ways deals with the veils, deals with many of the obstacles, the soul's full effulgence. And that the soul comes in with a certain karma, a certain mission, a certain lessons to learn, aspects of consciousness to develop, and it also needs to overcome certain obstacles in that development. It's not just a simple process of self-expression, but we have to develop ourselves, we have to grow. And part of that growth involves overcoming obstacles. And some of those obstacles are in the form of wounds, are in the form of karmic relationship with our parents that are difficulties to be worked out. And much of the time, the working out is only minimal. And one of the extraordinary innovations of psychotherapy is that it shows us ways that we can work out these emotional entanglements, which become crystallized in the psyche, and which prevent further growth. So I like that way of looking at it, that psychotherapy provides a way of working with the veils and also of then freeing this sort of soul program, that the authentic self is a kind of expression of the soul on this particular lifetime. And as we align with our authentic self and work through and erode the defenses that keep this self from coming online and bring it into our lives more and more, that it's more and more tuning into the soul guidance as this happens, more and more tuning into this deeper inner guidance, which ultimately comes from the soul.
For the full interview with Bran Courtwright, visit noelbell.net/podcasts or search on YouTube for Bran Courtwright Noel Bell interview.